There was no other explanation. The young man in front of me had put his seat so far back that his head was all but in my lap. My own seat was raked at a peculiar angle that induced immediate and lasting neck ache. It had a lever on its side, which I supposed might bring it back to a more comfortable position, but I knew from long experience that if I touched it even tentatively, the seat would fly back and crush both the kneecaps of the sweet little old lady sitting behind me. So I left it alone. We bounced through a snowy half-light, out through the sprawling suburbs of Oslo and into the countryside. The scattered villages and farmhouses looked trim and prosperous in the endless dusk. Every house had Christmas lights burning cheerily in the windows. I quickly settled into that not unpleasant state of mindlessness that tends to overcome me on long journeys, my head lolling on my shoulders in the manner of someone who has lost all control of his neck muscles and doesn't really mind. My trip had begun. I was about to see Europe again. The first time I came to Europe was in 1972. Skinny, shy, alone. In those days, the only cheap flights were from New York to Luxembourg, with a refueling stop en route at Keflavik Airport at Reykjavik. The airplanes were engagingly past their prime. Oxygen masks would sometimes drop unbidden from their overhead storage compartments and dangle there until a stewardess with a hammer and a mouthful of nails came along to put things right. And the door of the lavatory tended to swing open if you didn't hold it shut with a foot, which brought a certain dimension of challenge to anything else you planned to do in there. And they were achingly slow. It took a week and a half to reach Keflavik, a small gray airport in the middle of a flat gray nowhere, and another week and a half to bounce on through the skies to Luxembourg. Everyone on the plane was a hippie, except the crew and two herring factory executives in first class. It was rather like being on a Greyhound bus on the way to a folk singer's convention. People were forever pulling out guitars and mandolins and bottles of Thunderbird wine and forging relationships with their seatmates that were clearly going to lead to lots of energetic sex on a succession of Mediterranean beaches. In the long, exciting weeks preceding the flight, I had sustained myself, I confess, with a series of bedroom ceiling fantasies that generally involved finding myself seated next to a panting young beauty, being sent by her father against her wishes to the Lausanne Institute for Nymphomaniacal Disorders, who would turn to me somewhere over the mid-Atlantic and say, "Forgive me, but would it be all right if I sat on your face for a while?" In the event, my seatmate turned out to be an acneed string bean with Buddy Holly glasses and a lineup of ballpoint pens clipped into a protective plastic case in his shirt pocket. He had boils on his neck that looked like bullet wounds that had never quite healed, and he smelled oppressively of Vicks Vapor Rub. He spent most of the flight reading Holy Scripture, moving both sets of fingertips across each line of text as he read, and voicing the words just loud enough for me to hear them as a fervent whisper in my right ear. I feared the worst. Somewhere over the Atlantic, as I was sitting taking stock of my 200 cubic centimeters of personal space, as one does on a long plane flight, I spied a coin under the seat in front of me, and with protracted difficulty leaned forward and snagged it. When I sat up, I saw my seatmate was looking at me with that ominous glow. "Have you found Jesus?" he asked suddenly. No, it's a quarter," I answered, and quickly settled down and pretended for the next 6 hours to be asleep, ignoring his whispered entreaties to let Christ build a bunkhouse in my heart. In fact, I was secretly watching out the window for Europe. I still remember that first sight. The plane dropped out of the clouds, and there below me was this sudden magical tableau of small green fields and steepled villages spread across an undulating landscape, like a shaken-out quilt just settling back onto a bed. I'd flown a lot in America, and had never seen much of anything from an airplane window but endless golden fields on farms the size of Belgium, and meandering rivers and pencil lines of black highway. It always looked vast and mostly empty. But here the landscape had the ordered perfection of a model railway layout. It was all so green and minutely cultivated, so compact, so tidy, so fetching, so European. I was smitten. I still am. I had brought with me a yellow backpack so enormous that when I went through